Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you on with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have three great women here. It is Doris and Mefrida. It is Tanya. And I can't wait to talking to them. So, but first, let's kick things off with a song selected by Doris and Mefrida.
Father set me free from the shackles of my haters. Spent 200K on a watch, not for flex, motivation and purpose. He set the table before me to showcase all my blessings. I did guidance and for the trotter back at the scheme, I did plot. And I was pushed to start. Back to back, I did make them mad. And there's no denier, no denier, nobody had that. Where I did me a day on top. Private room for Louis Vuitton. Five star, no big nickname. Give me the money over the fame. Over the fame. See what we done. No be wallpaper, we dey live this life. If you bring bad vibes, I go exit chat to you alive. See what we done. No be cha-cha-cha, we dey show working. Every next day come.
Till eternity. Till eternity.
Me free from the shackles of my haters. 9 million the house, don't be flex, motivation and purpose. I for do my status, cause baby I'm in different house, different location. So sick of damn patience. Yes, I took a pause. See, I'm back now, the king's on top. And you know, denier, no denier, nobody had that. When me, a day on top. Private room every time we shop. Is it no be nickname? Give me the money. Over the fame. Over the fame.
See what we done. No be wallpaper, we dey live this life. If you bring bad vibes, I go exit chat to you alive. See what we done. No be cha-cha-cha, we dey show working. Every day they come.
Till eternity. Till eternity.
I'm so happy to welcome here on this show two sustainability strategist, ecosystem builder, and Peshidu co-founders Connecting Africa, its diaspora, and global capital to unlock inclusive growth. So welcome, Doris and Mefrida.
Thank you, Annabelle.
Thank you so much, Annabelle.
I'd like to introduce you with a few words, Doris and Mefrida. Doris Kirui, and please correct me if I don't spell right, and Mefrida Valley belong to a new generation of global bridge builders. As co-founder of Peshidu, they are helping connect African innovators, diaspora leaders, investors, and policymakers around a shared vision, unlocking Africa's next chapter of growth. And I get great goosebumps saying that, because their work sits at the intersection of sustainability, economic development, entrepreneurship, women's support, and global collaboration. At a time when the world is searching for new models of inclusive prosperity, they are demonstrating that the future may belong not to isolated ecosystems, but to connected ones. Great to have you here.
Thank you once again.
So, Doris and Mefrida, I would like to ask you first three questions. And as you are two, you have the great chance to say, okay, no, I don't want to say that. This is something she wants to answer. Okay, so this is something you can do, of course. And I have three first questions I would like to answer you, which are very close to the heart of the We Empower radio show. So maybe it's a bit unfair. Tanya can already prepare for that. But okay, so just kidding. And We Empower, we always ask, what does sustainable empowerment mean to you personally? And how do you live sustainability to others, environment, through your work or life?
So, okay, since I peeped I have to start, I was going to ask Doris if she'd like to start, but I can go ahead. Sustainable empowerment, you know, for me, sustainability is really about long-term thinking, about legacy, about generations to come. And, you know, when I think about empowerment in that context, you know, it's more than just empowerment to the generation that's living now, but to the generations to come. At our inaugural event in January alongside the World Economic Forum, we had one of our panel moderators, Christopher Baneful, who really said, right now we are living the past that six generations from now are going to experience. So what are we doing now to empower those in the future? So when I think of sustainable empowerment, you know, it's really a multi-generational thing, making sure that we are creating a sustainable present and future. So living within our economic and environmental boundaries, empowering societies, empowering people, and really making sure that there is a distribution equity as much as possible to everyone who's involved in the world, if that's not too ambitious.
I think we have to be really dreamer to make a future happen, and a future which is not there, we can only create as being dreamers and having a wide perspective, not be shy of having it really, really big. Thank you so much. Doris, would you like to add something?
Yes, I think I would just like to add to what Mefrida has said that so beautifully. We are both working in sustainability. To begin with, I have been in the sustainability field for 10 years now. And when I think about sustainability, for me, it has come to putting the human at the center of it. Because as you just mentioned at the beginning, that we are living in such a disconnected world, and AI is going to disrupt that so much. How are we connecting as people? How are we connecting as humans? And for me, when I think of empowerment now, to me, it goes beyond resources. It's about how do we bring people along? You know, how do we connect people? How do we build communities in such a digitalized world? And that has become so important to me. And because I still think community is very important in an isolated world. So that's what I'm thinking for future generations. How do we ensure that beyond the social, the environmental issues that they're going through or what's happening, how do we still stay connected as humans? That's what's at the heart of sustainability for me right now, the human at the center of it all.
I love it. I really love what you say, because it's exactly what I think and what keeps the world together. Instead of thinking that we have to go to the Mars, thinking about an ecosystem which is sustainable, which helps us saving this great ecosystem for all of us, making sure that we stay human in the way we connect with each other, and understanding that innovation doesn't mean to be a not human. Innovation can and should mean going back to understand humanity. Thank you so much, Doris and Mefrida, for this. I'm sure, I mean, you see a lot, you experience a lot, both of you, and you did wide journeys. You have a long, long path. You're traveling a lot. What are the three health habits, or let's say life hacks, that help you stay energized, balanced, and truly well, physically or mentally, or just both?
Yes, so I love sports. That's one thing that keeps me. So I work out almost every day when I can, even when I travel. So I went for a long walk this morning. So that's one way of keeping myself physically fit. That's important for my mental health, because when I'm walking, when I'm jogging, I realize that I think a lot. It's my way to unwind. And I try so much not to take any gadget with me when I'm working out or when I'm walking, because I want time with myself and also just to listen to the nature. I feel like it's so rejuvenating for me. So that's the time when I always have my thoughts sorted out and what I want to do for the day. So that keeps me going. The second thing I would say for me is I have learned to really being confident and shutting off negative energy. That has come with age, of course. I must say, as you get older, you really learn how to shut off what's important, what's not important. And I have one philosophy. I only worry about what I can control. What I can't control, I don't lose sleep. And I tell you, I sleep. I don't lose sleep. I ask myself, can I control it? Can I not control it? Then what I can't control, the war, this, I can't control that. So I will think about it, but it does not occupy me. And also just surrounding myself with women or people who really empower me and bring that positive energy, I think is very important. Those are really my three life hacks that keep me happy. And I can say I am very happy at this point in my life.
Love this very much, Doris. And when you told me about your walk in the morning, I saw myself, and I saw myself also watching people, for example, young women, young mothers, carrying their kid in front of them, but having their earbuds in and just talking with somebody. Where I thought, what is this about? I mean, how much attention do you give yourself if you're just talking with somebody else? You have your young child in front of you, not talking with the child, even giving your child a device where the child in the age of 2 can watch a movie. Horrible. I think it's so important, and it brings me also back to what you said beforehand, Doris Marfrida. This humanity in the world of technology gives us back the idea of who we are, what potential we have, and not forgetting about how important it is to have these communities. Thank you. Marfrida, you are a young mother. Maybe this idea came also to me and my head because of you. I'm sure you do it differently. Would you like to add some health habits or life hacks?
Yeah, sure. And just to comment on what you've said, Annabelle, I think you might find me guilty maybe once or twice, also being on the phone while with the baby, because when you're taking care of the baby the whole day, sometimes you cannot involve ignore certain calls. But fortunately, right now I have one of my very good friends who's taking care of my son. And I think that would bring me to one of my health habits is really keeping good people around you, and community and people who care about you, who have your best interests at heart, who will challenge you, and who will really bring, that good feeling, because we really need that every day, and increasingly more, as Doris was saying, and as we were saying, with the evolution of technology and how disconnected we're becoming. So I really try to maintain a community of people around me who will just add to that goodness in my life. And I have to say, Doris is one of them as well. The second thing I would like to add is sleep. I try to get sleep as much as I can. If I am not sleeping, my mind is not processing things effectively. I'm just not in a good mood. I'm not glowing, so I try to get sleep, albeit that is very challenging now having a baby, but I try to do the best I can. I have to give a shout out to my husband, my mom, mother-in-law for also supporting on that end. And then the last thing is hygiene. It sounds funny, but really, I think when I take the time to have a really long shower or a really long bath, to be honest, I or even take care of myself, I really have a disconnection in my mind, and then I can just meditate, or I get my brightest ideas when I'm just doing something manual and mechanical, because I think during the day we're using our minds so much, right? And so we don't get a pause to just be bored or to have that space where spark and inspiration can come. So I think that keeps me clean, but it also really brings out those spaces during the day where it's about, you know, self-care physically and mentally.
Thank you so much. I already got pictures while you were describing this, and I love how you do this and that you say, I do manual things. I think we all do too little in that manual things where we grab something, smell something, feel something, just use our senses and train them, because our senses is our intuition system. Is that what gives us also body security and body safety? And we often belong too much to external devices, where we think that yes, if the Oura ring tells us, then I should sleep. Yes, now I got it. But just listening to our body, which maybe said, "Hey, you should sleep." It's easy, and it's training not only your connection to your body, but it's training also, of course, all your senses to get better in this world, to be more successful, even in the end, but also more happy, right? Now there comes a question where I'm not sure how much of this we get answered until the break, but I would like to ask this because it's a very important question to me. Can you share a life experience that shaped who you are today, a moment you will never forget, and why it changed? And I'm sure sometimes we have not even one, but maybe there's one which stays in your mind.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just the lifelong experience of having traveled so much and relocated so much in my life. I was born in Zimbabwe. When I was 8 years old, my family moved to New York. When I was 12, we moved to South Africa. And 16, we moved to Switzerland. And then I studied for 4 years in the Netherlands, where I also met Doris. And then I'm now based in Switzerland. So those are, let's say, little... I would say they're big defining moments throughout the journey of my life that have shaped who I am, that have changed who I am possibly, because they've really given me a worldview. I've met many people, I've encountered with different cultures, and I think that also shapes how I see the world today, how I integrate into different spaces. But I also believe that it has given me one of the greatest gifts, which is that sense of identity, because no matter where I go, I am who I am, and as much as that is evolving every day. I also strengthened my roots in my own home country, because wherever you go, then you're shown, I think you become more of your country of origin, right? Or you appreciate it more. And also you look for connections, you share also that more with other people. So I think that all in all just shapes who I am today and how I go about everything.
Wow, thank you so much. I think we, I'm not sure if we should start with the next, with a question for you, Doris, or keep it for after the break, because I think you would like to share also a story, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, is it a short story or a longer story?
It's a long story.
We need a teaser before the break. Let's have it. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. We need
like a cliffhanger, you know, so people come back.
Okay. Of course. Then I think we keep the tension and say, okay, there comes
yes.
a great story after the
conversation. Exactly. Exactly.
Stay tuned.
Yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Doris, we started talking about a situation which shaped your life. And I just want to start before I give you the word. I often be asked, Annabelle, there are happening so many things to you, sometimes weird things, sometimes bad things, sometimes very good things. What? Why is this happening? And then my answer is always because I'm doing so much, I'm moving so much, I'm living also the life to the fullest. And I think saying this, I think it's similar to you, to all of you having here in the radio show today, that we are living life to the fullest. And then things happen more than to other people, which is us just waking up every day the same hour, doing the same things every day, meeting same people every day. Of course, then you minimize everything what could happen, right? So the word is to you, Doris.
Exactly. You've just said it. There's so many moments in life, you know, but some I think outweigh others. And that's why we tend to remember them more than others that happen. Huh? So for me, it's the same. Many things have happened. I've moved around so much ever since coming to Europe. But I think one experience that has really shaped who I am is, I think growing up in a big family, I have 6 sisters, so we are 7. And most of the time when I tell people, they're like, oh, but we are close. And I love my sisters dearly. But being a teenager, for me, it was the moment my father lost my job. That's a very personal story. So suddenly, he was the breadwinner of the family. And suddenly, when I finished high school, having to think of, now I am on my own. My father has to take care of my younger sisters, and I now have to figure my life out. That was for me, or that has been the moment that really has shaped who I am. So since then, I had to start working. I had to find a job. And I was recently looking back and thinking my first job was in a flower farm, picking flowers here in Kenya. And it was really a tough job. But I knew my bigger dream. I knew my bigger ambition. I knew that I wanted to go abroad. How? I didn't know how that or when it would happen. But it did happen 8 years later. And for me, that period of waiting was so long, trying everything, it not working. And you're just like, what's happening to me? Especially when you're seeing your peers moving ahead and nothing is working out for you. And you're going all through all these things and wondering, why me? But looking back, I always tell people, actually, when that opportunity for me to go abroad came, it was the right moment. I think I was ready then. Had I gotten that opportunity earlier, I don't think I would have been ready. So that, for me, looking back, was the moment that really has shaped who I am. And it has taught me a lot of to give people grace, because we don't really know the whole story. People are seeing Doris now, who is successful, who is doing things, but they don't know my story. They don't know what I have been through. They don't know those odd jobs that I had to do. They don't know that a stranger supported me to go abroad, just a stranger who believed in me so much that told me, I'm going to pay for your ticket to go abroad. So it has really taught me to have so much grace, because we don't know someone's full story. We just know what we are seeing. And that has shaped me so much in who I am. So I move a lot with so much grace when I see people or when I meet them, because I'm like, behind that smile, behind what I'm seeing now, behind the Annabelle that I'm seeing, there's been so much, and I just don't have the full picture.
I like this very much, Doris. And it's not always as we see each other, right? It's also how others talk about us. And I mean, it's so often that people talk about other people with a screen of their own experiences. And I remember a friend of mine. She's living in close to Joburg, to Johannesburg, and she was a good friend of mine until I realized that she was also a coach coaching me, and until I realized that all what she felt about her life, which was unlived, she projected on my life. So when I, for example, had my first child and I was thinking about having a second, and I talked with her about it in a coaching, she said, no, you shouldn't have a second child. No. So one is really enough. And then after the coaching, I said, how much kids do you have? By the way, I remember one, right? How is it about your story? And then it came out that she wanted to have really a second child, a third child, and she tried, and she couldn't. So she was jealous against every woman who tried to get more than one child. And hearing this, I thought, okay, why aren't you staying with the story for yourself? I mean, by yourself, why are you trying to put it over me? And it is exactly what you are saying, Doris. We so often project, and it's so great if we stay just with us, not projecting, just leaving this by us and solving even also issues by ourselves, right? I mean, what I liked, I mean, Frida and you has said before the break that the home country plays a bigger role also when you are growing up and when you're getting older, reflecting, of course, also the joy, but also the challenges of the country. Africa has so different faces. And you give two faces to this Africa, very modern faces, very female faces, what I think is so necessary. What are your goals and the work you do? What is your vision of an Africa by the work you do?
Yes, so we founded Pachelu really because we saw that there's so much fragmentation in the efforts to foster growth on the continent and invest in the continent. There's a lot of interest that is growing in investing and doing business in Africa. People just don't know or understand how to navigate this market, you know, but the opportunity is so ripe and it's so rich and it's there. But we saw that there's maybe a disconnect, and what we needed to do was to simply connect people who should have already met to do something great. And so we really operate to connect investors, policymakers, global allies, the African diaspora to opportunities on the ground. And we operate over, you know, four different areas. So that would be innovation, markets, ecosystems, and the fourth one is slipping my mind now, for sure, sustainability and impact. And so our vision is really a prosperous Africa where everyone can play a part, right? So those, especially, you know, as African diasporans, Doris and I, we wanted to find a way to reconnect with home and to contribute to home from where we are here in Europe. So we ourselves want to mobilize African diasporans and other people who see the opportunity at an eye level to contribute to Africa. That's going to be the largest population of young people in 2050. One quarter of the population of Africa will population of the world will be based in Africa. So we want to invite everyone onto that journey towards Africa's prosperity. Doris, please go ahead and add.
Yeah, I think you have said it very well. And it's just, there is a new renaissance. I was actually speaking to a friend this morning. I'm home in Kenya, and she was talking about there is this new renaissance about Africa, where my generation or our generation is very self-aware. And Annabelle, it goes back to the beginning where we spoke about communities and the importance of people. And so we started this because we wanted to really bring people together and to have them connect. Because people tend to do business with people they have seen, people they know, and they feel more comfortable. So that's the whole idea, connecting people, connecting ideas, bringing capital together. And that's what we really want to do with Pachedu. At the end of it, looking at the big picture, it's the human at the center, it's the people at the center. And that's what we want to do. Those are the people we want to connect.
Thank you so much. I think it's just a chance what you're doing, because I feel there's still so much prejudice against Africa. For example, I just take my own situation. I have some very good friends from Africa, and I have a coder who is in Africa. He does a lot of social work also for kids. And when I said to people from Europe about having a coder from Africa who built my website, they said, "Oh, are you really sure to take a coder from Africa? From which country is he in Africa?" I said, "Nigeria." "Oh, Nigeria. Oh, you have to be careful." And I said, "Why should I be careful?" And it's exactly that, what Doris, what you said, prejudice. No, I said, "How many people do you know from Nigeria?" "Oh, maybe one." I said, "Yeah, but where does your prejudice come from? What is bad about people from Nigeria for having them for something which has something to do with trust?" Yeah. So I'm super happy that you are doing this, Doris and Mefrida. And I feel already our time comes to an end, unfortunately. So we need a second series. If you want, please look at a new date, and then we can continue there also our conversation. I'm very, very happy for everything you do. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you for the
Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Thank you. And that brings me to Tanya. So Tanya, welcome here in the show. I'm very happy to have you as well here as a very strong lady. You are doing Ability Hub. Great name, empowering companies to turn ESG, sustainable procurement and compliance into measurable business value. So welcome here in the show, Tanya.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, Doris and Marina, for that great conversation previously. It was really inspiring to me.
I would like to introduce you with a few words, Tanya. And Tanya is one of Europe's most influential voices on making sustainability practical, scalable, and business-driven. As founder and CEO of Ability Hub, she helps organizations transform ESG from regulatory complexity into competitive advantage. Her mission is simple: democratize knowledge, empower people, and accelerate sustainable transformation. Tanya believes that resilience begins with capability building, not compliance. Let's explore how leadership can create real impact in an era of constant change. Hello, Tanya.
Thank you.
So Tanya, first of all, I would like to drop the same question I asked Doris and Mafrida. What about sustainable in your personal life? If you maybe say your daily life, would you like to share a few things with us?
So for me, sustainable empowerment means more than just telling people what to do. This is what very often happens. For me, it means giving them knowledge, guidance, and confidence, also helping them to make decisions on their own. So I really meet a lot of people every day who really wants to make a difference. And at the same time, they are constantly confronted with new demands, technical terms, and new expectations. And eventually, they no longer know where to start and how to proceed. In this situation, I don't think applying even more pressure helps, and sometimes companies doing that. What does help is reducing, from my point of view, complexity and making a realistic next step clear. Sustainability is often treated like the cherry on the cake, and I think it's the cake by itself. It's not a side issue. It's part of how we manage our economy, how we invest, how we buy, and how we treat people. In German, we have a very nice term for that, Enkelfähig, a very complex word, I would say. So Enkel is the word of grandchildren. And Enkelfähig, to me, it means being economically successful today without limiting the opportunities for those who comes after us. So we don't get it perfectly right with every decision, but simply asking the question often, from my point of view, changes our perspective. So am I just solving a short-term problem right now, or am I creating something valuable for long-term? This is what it is for me.
This is really great. This is really great, Hanyo, what you're sharing. Because I think a few days ago, somebody asked me, Annabelle, are you still on sustainability? I said, what is this question for? I said, oh, sustainability is already outdated. Nobody talks about sustainability anymore. It is about making growth and profit. And I said, yeah, but I mean, the nature is still there. We are part of the nature. And sustainable thinking is a key of everything, what rewards our ecosystem, what rewards also our being a human and having humanity, our ethics and everything. So I found this question a bit weird, and I love your answer. Tanya?
I think this cherry on the cake is what really comes into my mind. So very often they say, hey, yes, in good times we invest in sustainability, but if it becomes difficult, oh, let's postpone it. And this, from my point of view, does make sense.
Absolutely. I'm completely with you. Sustainability is no nice to have. Hey, let's play it because it's nice and it gives us some good reputation. It is for good times and bad times because it's about our future, right? And I mean, I love your positive attitude, Tanya, which is also, I mean, in the word ability hub. How great is this? So giving the people an idea already with just a name. But I can imagine that also the same as for Doris or Mafrida, the world is not always a honey cake for you. And it's sometimes even that you meet people where you say, oh my God, it could get really aggressive by not living sustainability, or I would love to help these people. What are your life hacks mentally and physically to stay really grounded?
Wish I could say like Doris Sport. I try to do it every day, but I'm not good at that. And to be honest, I don't have any spectacular life hacks, I would say. For me, it's more about very simple things that are integral part of my daily routine. So for example, we have pets, so in total 15. So I live in the middle of nowhere, directly in the nature. And that alone gives me a very clear routine every day. You know, they need to be taken care of. And no matter how full my calendar is, what the weather is like, what problem is waiting for me at my desk, that gives me a bit structure and reliably bring back down to earth with my own thoughts, to be honest. And the second is getting outside and moving around. A lot of things happen naturally because of the animals, but I've noticed quite clearly that when I've been working on a complex topic for a long time, getting some exercise often helps me more than spending another hour in front of the screen. And when I'm walking or working outside, very often my thought themselves out of their own, to be honest. And the third is, for me, the most important thing, taking a step back from my professional world. Because I'm dealing with intensively with regulation, with risks, with transformation. Also, very often these days with a very, let's say, negative narrative. And that's why I need conversations, books or topics have absolutely nothing to do with my professional life, because then I get really new perspectives and it prevents my own professional world from eventually become my entire world, because there are so many things out there and I don't want to stay in a bubble. I want to be, and Doris, I love your comment about community and connecting. So I think that it is what it is about. Not stay in your bubble. Take a look left and right, connect to other people, connect to new ideas. This is what helps me, my life hacks.
Thank you so much, Tanya. We have a small break of approximately 2 minutes and then we are back. So stay tuned.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning. losing teeth? What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Tanya, we talked about how you understand sustainability, and I had also while you were talking about how you live, I experienced this. I'm living always in city centers, just moving from one to the next hub, and sometimes I wish I would have just nothing around me, just nothing. So I would love to visit you.
And you're invited. You know, I lived in big cities as well, and I moved to the countryside 8 years ago, and it was so funny because my friends, they watched at Google Maps and they said, oh, Tanya, there's even a bakery around you. I said, yes, I know. Just what?
That's funny. I just had an invitation from a university, very, very good reputation, but there's even no bakery around it. And the students even told me exactly this. There's no bakery around it. Think about it twice if you want to stay there.
But how can you survive?
Exactly. How can you survive? And it brings us, of course, also back to roots. What can we do, right? I mean, I met a friend of mine. She's living also a bit out in the rural area. And knowing her job, I mean, she's a head of a really big company. You would think that she lives in a city center, but she's sewing her hall clothes by herself. She's making, she's preparing cheese on her own, bread on her own. And when she told me about her lifestyle, it sounded so natural that you wouldn't say, oh, but doesn't it take so long? But isn't that complicated? For her, it's a kind of sustainable routine, which keeps her grounded. And I think I hear it also from that, what you say.
Yes.
So I would also like to ask you the question, is there or have there been one experience in your life which shaped you the way you are today, which makes us sometimes really thankful for life or sometimes also reminding of what you made since then?
Yes, of course. I think one experience has been constant threat throughout my life, time and again, is I've entered always new jobs as a career changer. So initially, for me, unfamiliar with the job and with their language and their rules. So I moved out from my parents' home quite early, trained as a hotel manager. Then I run a very, very small hotel, only 15 rooms. And later, then I jumped into the industry sector and I changed my roles and positions quite often, I would say, not every year, but on a regular basis. And I never did the same job for another company. So I completely changed very often. And a lot of my friends said to me, hey, Tanya, you have a very good paid job in a very good situation. Markets are struggling at the moment. Why the hell are you changing now? And for me, it was always, I want to learn something new. And then 12 years ago, I ended up in the field of sustainability and supply chains, where I felt that many of the things that interest me come together here. So first of all, business. I love business and I love also people, connecting to people, and you have to deal with that in our field, but also international corporations, risk, innovation. And the question of how can we work and live successfully in the long term? And I would say that path had made me a generalist. So I'm not so deep in one topic, because I really like to think out of the box and trying to connect to different perspectives, because I think we can grow with that or rethink things. And it has shown me that courage doesn't mean never failing. I failed a lot of times in my life, I would say. But courage means daring to try something new anyway, learning from it and moving forward. So this is, I would say, how I become the person I am today with all the people who inspired me during the journey. So,
I mean, listening to you, I hear a lot of words like ability, trust, but yeah, very a lot of these words where we in the past said, ooh, this is soft skills, it's not that important. Well, we nowadays say, ooh, this is future skills, this is super important. So you are working in a area where it is about a lot of also regulations and laws. If you could define the ESG, the sustainability laws and regulation from scratch, what would you do differently?
Looking now at AI, because we have to deal with AI as well these days. And for me, with thinking about sustainability, business, new technologies, for me, the key change isn't that AI will generate even more reports or content. I think it's the information that can be linked together and translated into decisions sooner. And looking at sustainability management in many companies I had a good view in, companies still very backward looking. And so they collect data, they review data, then compile it into reports months later. Of course, these reports are important. But above all, they showed what has already happened. And I think with AI now, and if I can think about what we can change, AI can turn data into earlier decision-making signals. Then reporting maybe increasingly become a tool for steering the business and not just a reporting. But at the same time, we need to keep in mind, and this is why I also love the thought of Doris of the community, AI does not assume responsibility. So it can recognize patterns, highlight contradiction, prepare scenarios, and reveal connections, let's say. But which goals accompany purpose, which conflict goals it accepts, and which decision it makes is still the responsibility of us leaders, people in the company. And so for me, it's crucial. Question is not, should we use AI for a change, but rather, are we using it to produce more and faster? From my point of view, this is bullshit. Or actually making better decision with it helps. So if I could change things, I would rather think this way, also looking at regulations, because for a lot of company, it's, let's say, a painful process, very overburdened process. And sometimes I ask myself, okay, let's say looking at decarbonization, it's a super important topic. We need to decarbonize, but at the same time, we are taking years to collect the data without that anything is changing. And so I would love to see more other directions that we maybe accept. We don't have 100% visibility, but we have the, let's say, heat map, and we start. And this is what I would love to do a little, or would love to see a little bit more.
What I also loved, what you pointed out, Tanya, is something which is rarely, rarely discussed. Because every regulation or every certification, everything where we put data together is data for the past, yes. And we want to talk about future, right? So is this, or would you say that this behavior or this idea, the structure, is something which is also the reason, therefore, that we often live more in the past and forget about the moment or forget about the future thinking, what we need to do for next generation, for conserving a great ecosystem, for making sure that biodiversity stays, and so on?
Absolutely. I think sometimes you need to be there and looking at, let's say, the future. What I'm missing quite often is an important skill that will make the ability sound judgment under the conditions of uncertainty. So let's take a procurement manager. So they will increasingly have to make decisions, even with not all information available, or maybe some information are wrong. And at the same time, they must consider cost, supply chain security, geopolitical developments, climate risk, and all the stuff. So it's not a single KPI, no dashboard, no matter how good. They will be able to fully handle this balance act, I would say. And the key is to understand different scenarios, identify conflicting objects, and still remain capability of making decisions. And what I think we are very rarely investing in the future because of stakeholders of big companies, we think in quarters. Looking at, let's say, family-owned companies, they have a different mindset. They think in generations because they know the name of my, let's say, grandchildren maybe is on the building. And I wish we are dare enough to adopt this thinking of family-owned business, thinking in generations, not short-term, from this to the next quarter. And very often, I think also the behavior of boards must change. They must take more responsibility, maybe reliability, because very often I met people in C-level positions and they said, you know, Tanya, I'm in that role for the next 2 years, then I'm retired. I don't want to change anything for that moment. And this is for me, it really makes me angry because I think there are so many lost chances because we must take care of the next generations. We want to have a good life for the next one. And very often I ask the question also to C-level, oh, wow, are you not interested in your kids, in your grandchildren? Is it okay for you that they live maybe in a very horrible world? Only that you make the next million or your company. So I think in this case, yeah, I wish we would be a little bit more dare. Also, C-level boards, not always hunting for the next stakeholder opinion.
Absolutely. Are there samples of people you see outside, leaders, where you would say, yes, they are doing a great job? Yes, they are role models, men or women?
Absolutely, absolutely. Otherwise, I would not survive my job. Yes, of course. I see a lot of people. They have new ideas, and as Doris and her colleagues, they bring together people from different perspectives. Where do we want to invest in the future? Where is the capital moving to? And of course, it's sometimes interesting that I meet people. They had a very Let's say if you my audience very often is C-level procurement guys and they are trying to reduce costs. This is their main job. And sometimes you feel there's a change, and their behavior is changing in the way how they source, how they think about people and connections and the material, what they need in the future. And from there, they start little by little sourcing processes, purchasing processes. And this is what really makes me happy. And sometimes it's simply that his son or daughter asks at the dinner, hey, what are you doing for my future? And sometimes let them rethink.
That's great. And I think you bring me to a point which will be, unfortunately, today my last question to you, Tanya. The next generation, yes, their voices. What would you say is necessary to give them a louder voice, or what is necessary to increase supporting these younger voices to give them more, to give them more credibility, or just to also to support them more in being able to get louder, being able to get more heard, helping also them to understand that it's right that they're spreading out loud what they think?
I think we had that situation years ago, Fridays for Future and all the stuff. I think it was a very good movement. And I meet a lot of young people. They started a career into a job, and the promise by the board was different than the real job they need to make later on, and they quit. So I think also companies need to realize people are looking for a sense in their work. And so it's not that they say, yeah, of course, I'm going to give all my work to that company that they make the next million. They want to have a purpose. And I think in these words of AI technologies, getting people together, connecting people to each other, sharing new ideas and bringing new ideas with a business value on the table. This is what I'm really pushing a lot of people for, not only saying, hey, sustainability, I know it's not the fancy word at the moment. Maybe we find a new narrative. We need to also realize it's about business. It's about human. It's the center of everything we do. But companies, they are not moving forward as long as they don't see value in that. So we need to, let's say, come together, create new ideas for scenario-based topics, and then promote it. Go with that idea to your boss. And that is, I'm really pushing for also building up knowledge already for students.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Tanya. So it would be great to have even more time to talk about this. So even here, we need a second series. Thank you so, so much for being here, Tanya, Doris, Mefreder. Thank you. That wraps us our episode for We Empower, the weekly radio show dedicated to celebrating the strengths, resilience, and limitless potential of women and men around the world. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey. Thank you for being part of our community. And until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise. Thank you.